It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Timing's everything, ladies and gentlemen. That's what Scott and I are talking about in the pregame show, warming up and ready to go. So let's get to it.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
Scott was just sharing with me his sage investment strategies and figuring out what to do with the portfolios, which is a daily event. Scott, you look at them every day. I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that you know, as our resident CFA, chartered financial analyst, and head portfolio guy here at Holland Financial, that you look at those portfolios every day.
Other than the half an hour or so I spend in here with you, that's really pretty much all.
Which is pure bliss. So then, that's a good time. You've got a good excuse. What do you say to somebody that maybe doesn't feel that way? They don't feel like their financial guy is really, I mean, people, I know people feel like small fish or don't feel like people are looking at their portfolios. Is it a big deal for the advisor not to?
Well, most advisory firms are so focused on marketing that the principals do all the marketing and the portfolio management is kind of an afterthought. Of course, we do it differently here. We've got a whole team of people that do nothing but that. So we're very, very focused on it. And, you know, we talk about how much the markets change every single day. And you have to know exactly what's in every portfolio all the time. And the way we're structured, we do.
And we do have a team. We've got 13 people here. That all we do all day long. Each person has their designated function. And I'm meeting with people. I'm planning their future, helping them figure out what to do. And you're back in your luxurious office with a 46-inch flat screen watching the market.
Yeah, and we also use what we call model portfolios, which means that of our hundreds of accounts that we manage, they're not all different. There's really, we try to keep
a lot of similarities.
Yeah, we try to keep them very, very uniform. And the reason for that is because as the portfolio manager, I really feel like I do have to know everything about every portfolio that we have. And if we have 250 customized portfolios, there's no way I can do that.
No way anyone can do that.
Yeah.
Nobody's that smart.
Right.
Or have that much time.
Then you're being reactive instead of proactive, and that's not the right way.
You're running around crazy. I've seen people do that. Yeah. There's just no way to do it.
Yep.
Well, speaking of crazy, talk about the market.
Yeah, Tuesday's market, pretty negative market. Dow down at the close on Tuesday, down 213 on the Dow, 23 on the S&P. NASDAQ, rough day for the NASDAQ, down 55. Oil down $1.31. We've actually seen gas prices go down for the first time in 11 weeks last week, so that's good news. Gold up 16 on Tuesday's trade at 1660, still well below the 1800 level that it was earlier in the last 6 months or so. And tens at 197, so a fair amount of money flowing into bonds again today.
A lot of money I read. I was reading a couple of Wall Street Journal articles, and there's a lot of money going into corporates. In fact, outstripping the supply.
Yeah, there's no yield in treasuries. So, you know, if you can get 50% more yield with, you know, sometimes just slightly more risk, it's a pretty easy trade to make. And then a lot of folks are taking that even one step further. And the high yield market has been just, I mean, crazy the last 6 months. Lots and lots and lots of money flowing there.
And when a lot of money flows into those, any of those types of bonds, it pulls down the yield.
It generally does, yeah.
Okay.
Just because of buying pressure.
Yeah. So somebody's saying, okay, well, I'm willing to take that risk. It's like the name that tune. Remember that?
Yeah,
the
sure.
TV show?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm willing to take that high yield bond for 5 notes.
Yeah.
I'll take it for 4. So people, the yield comes down because there's so much demand that the bond seller, be that the issuer or the somebody else who holds the bond,
right,
can demand a higher price.
That's right.
Remind our listeners that price of bonds is inverse to the yield that you get when you buy it.
Yep. So a lot of money has been flowing that way. And I do want to talk to you a little bit today later on about volume in the stock market, which has just been anemic.
It's at a 4-year low, right?
Yeah, it's just been so anemic. And there's a couple of different reasons for that other than the reason that people just aren't interested.
Why is that?
Well, there are a couple things to it.
Because I think it's fascinating. I know you do.
The options and futures market has just been on fire. So a lot of the capital that has traditionally gone into equities is going into alternative asset classes. It's going into futures and it's going into options markets. It's even going into real estate to a great extent at this point. So money is going elsewhere. It's not that people aren't investing. It's that it's going elsewhere. There also are some just sort of strange things. Like, for example, Citigroup did a reverse split. Remember in 2009, they did a 10-for-1 reverse split. Well, Citigroup alone used to count for about 7% of all the volume in the stock market. But now, since they've done this reverse split, there are so many fewer shares.
They only account for 1/7 of that 5%.
That's right. That's right. So there have been a lot of other factors like that, but by and large, I think the fact still remains that the retail investor is on the sidelines, has not participated in this rally we've had since October. I think they are going to come back to the market at some point, and when they do, that'll be a lot of money flowing in and causing some buying pressure to push prices higher.
Okay, well, I've got pressure from Lisa to take a quick break. We'll be right back for some more sage thoughts from Scott Connor. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first 2 books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
And we're back. And let's talk some more. Which way are you going to go, Scott?
Well, let me just tell you a couple things about Tuesday's trade, some of the factors that pushed the market around a little bit. Concerns in Europe quite a bit still.
Yeah.
10-year Spanish bond auction, very, very, very high yields, highest yields in quite some time. So,
Which is not good for the country. It's good for people who are investing, right?
Well,
but they're taking a lot of risk,
yeah,
aren't they?
On a 10-year, it's a lot of risk. 10-year auction in Italy as well, highest yields there in almost 2 months. So, I mean, not really earth-shattering stuff, but, you know, we like to keep a close eye on yields, and they are a terrific measurement of risk. High yields mean high risk. Big sell-off in Europe on the European markets on Tuesday, hit a 12-week low. Most of that, I think, was based on the heels of the Spain bond auction. Not so great. Corporate news, Apple crossed the $600 billion market cap threshold today. Only the second company ever to do that.
Who's the other one?
Microsoft.
Exxon?
Microsoft.
Microsoft, okay.
$600 billion. That's a massive company.
A lot of money.
Overseas, China reported that their GDP growth is slowing, which is what we've really actually been looking for. That's not what we look for in our countries, particularly right now, but it's slowing, which leads us to believe there's a higher potential for a soft landing in China than we've been expecting, and also a trade surplus for China at their latest report, which is a measurement of global demand. A lot of their products are leaving the country, so that gives us some good feelings about global demand, so that's good news. Domestic economic news, not a whole lot, really. Wholesale inventories rose a little bit more than expected in February, 0.9% to a record $480 billion. That's wholesale inventories. I think that's a good thing because it tells us that manufacturers are gearing up for
more
demand.
They're building up their inventory for more growth, more sales.
Yep, but the Small Business Confidence Index that was released on Tuesday slipped for the first time in 6 months.
I don't like that.
It's still a decent number. It's 92.5. It was 94.3 last month.
People are skittish. You know, there's cautious optimism, but it's still... You know, I mean, it's the Dow numbers don't reflect, I think, the mood of the country.
Yeah, I think also on a sentiment number like that, it really depends on where we are within the last couple of days of the measurement. And keep in mind, we've had about five straight days of negative stock market returns here. So that does cause people to start to think maybe things aren't so great as we thought. But if we get five positive days, then that sentiment can turn around real quick. So that was pretty much it for economic news. I have a couple pieces of corporate news, I guess, if you want to call them that.
Almost, right?
Yeah, Best Buy. Let's talk about Best Buy. We had talked at the end of last year. Remember, we said, well, what's going to happen in 2012? And one of the things we said was that it's probably going to be the end of the so-called big box retail stores. And I think we saw another nail in that coffin today. Best Buy CEO Brian Dunn resigned. He had been the CEO for 3 years, started on the floor there in a blue shirt selling TVs and stuff like that in 1985, worked his way all the way up the ranks. They just have not kept up with Amazon at all. They're closing 50 stores, laying off about 400 people or so. So nothing good there, and Mr. Dunn resigned with no argument from the board. A little bit more information on the Facebook purchase of Instagram. Analyst community is saying that the reason Facebook really wanted Instagram, remember, this is the company that you take pictures, and it's like the Twitter of pictures,
yeah.
Right? Well, apparently the big news here is that when you take a picture and post it somewhere, technology is so advanced that companies can analyze those photos and see where they've been taken and get a trend of your behavior. So, for example, if you're taking a lot of vacation pictures, then they're going to start to push ads to you for airlines and things like that. If you're taking a lot of pictures of a new baby, they're going to start pushing ads to you for Pampers and that type of thing. So it's all about data.
Wow.
And Facebook just landed the
holy
grail of data.
So this technology will let Facebook do more of that and better analysis of the picture. So the pictures you post up on your Facebook wall.
Yeah, they're not just fun and games.
They're going to be, this technology will let them analyze that and then target you with more and more specialized ads. Wow.
Yep. That's exactly right. Also from Facebook, they announced their IPO date. They're shooting for May 17th. Backup plan May 24th in case.
Do we have any idea, sorry to interrupt, any idea at all about what kind of price point we're coming out at?
Not yet. We'll start to get some rumors of the pricing in about mid-May or so, but they have to go on the road show, find out who wants to buy it, how many people want to buy it. They have to gauge interest, and then they'll set the price. Obviously, they'll set it as high as possible. And then when it comes out on the open market, I would expect that to triple, quadruple, something like that the very first day.
Well, here's a great, I got this question from somebody I met with recently, Scott. What do you say to somebody who says, hey, I want to do that. I want to participate. I want to buy the shares at the open, and then I want to sell them for quadruple at the end of the day and call it a day.
Yeah, we probably are really not going to be able to help folks do that. Most of that stuff goes to institutions. It goes to the underwriting banks. It goes to friends and families.
It's the people that are all on the short list at the party.
Yeah, especially
right?
For one like this that has so much demand. Yeah. Now, they're not supposed to turn right around and sell it the same day. It's kind of rude to a certain extent, but they will, you know, and there is so much public demand for people like that that ask you that question that it wouldn't surprise me to see it triple or quadruple at the open.
But your general thoughts, Scott, about IPOs like this, even something that's as well known as Facebook and with an IPO that's been so anticipated, not something you recommend to go and try to buy into the IPO unless it's play money, right?
Yeah, generally not, because there are so many unknowns. You don't know what the analyst community is going to think of it. You don't know how it's going to trade. You don't really know anything. You haven't seen any kind of a real track record of earnings announcements, and you don't really know how the CEO operates in public. So going from a private company to a public company is a whole new ballgame. It's not to say that nobody should ever buy an IPO, but for me as a portfolio manager, the risk that comes attached to that is entirely too high.
It's just too high for a managed portfolio.
Right.
Maybe play money, but...
Yeah, yeah, sure. Just like sometimes clients like to play with options, or they like to play with, you know, they'll buy a company because their kid works there, whatever the case is. That's terrific. It's not a sound investment philosophy, you know, which you hired me to do.
Exactly. That's why you're here. Well, hold on. You've got more, but Lisa wants a break. We'll be right back to continue.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
We're back, and we got a couple more things to wrap up with Scott before I get to a couple other things that I want to talk about. Go ahead, Scott.
Well, two things. Earnings season starts at the close on Tuesday. Alcoa announced earnings already, and 10 cents a share, revenue of about $6 billion for the quarter. That was better than expectations, so earnings season's off to a good start. Analysts are expecting earnings growth to be up about 3.2% or so. So hopefully, you know, if we really have a good, solid earnings season this time around, we could see some momentum return to the market on the upside.
So people shouldn't throw in the towel with this recent pullback that we've seen, because it's not, given where we've gone so far this year, I mean, it's not surprising to see that, right?
Yeah, we're down approximately 4% in the last 5 days, which, you know, that certainly is not what we strive for, but it's not that big a deal. Markets don't move in straight up lines like they have since October. So it certainly is a part of a normal market. It's not something that I'm concerned about right now. Although, you know, we keep an eye on those bond yields and they show us risk, and we keep an eye on what's going on in Europe. Those are the two things I think right now that are showing the most appetite for risk in the market.
So somebody with a good chunk of cash saying, you know, I've just been trying to decide on when, I've been praying for a pullback. This might be their opportunity.
It certainly could be. Yeah, I mean, we have a little bit of cash in some portfolios here and there that I'm thinking about putting to work in the next day or so.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks. Scott Connor is going to make a move on the market.
Yeah, well, it's, Scott, it's moves, not going to amount to much.
Watch out for the market.
But we stay fully invested anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
we do.
You know, we're not market timers. I think
right.
Market timing is a pure recipe for failure. So
I
when I say
it,
we have
yeah.
cash, I mean, we have, you know, 1 or 2% maybe that I'll put into an ETF to try to increase equity exposure or increase fixed income exposure, depending on what the portfolio is.
I'm sold.
Also, I want to tell you about this story about Coca-Cola.
Oh, this is a good one.
Here's a guy named Tony Marone. He's the late Tony Marone, passed in 2010, went to an estate sale and bought a certificate for a company called Palmer Union Oil. Basically just bought it, I guess, because he liked the looks of it. Signed it to himself, which means he, you know, now officially owns it. Did some research on the company and found out that in a weird sort of roundabout way, Coca-Cola purchased Palmer Union Oil back in, I don't know, the 20s or 30s or something like that. So he's saying this certificate of Palmer Union Oil is now worth about $130 million in Coca-Cola, and he's suing them. And Coca-Cola has said, yeah, this isn't really funny. We don't think this is even remotely entertaining. Go somewhere else.
Wow. Well, they say Coke adds life, and $130 million would add a lot of life, but not for him, for his family, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not going to happen for him. There's no record anywhere of this particular share, this particular certificate, ever being transferred into Coca-Cola stock. And it's not uncommon that one company will buy another company and just assume the debt, and all of a sudden the equity is worthless, which is probably what happened here.
Okay.
But there's no record of it, so Mr. Marone's heirs, I think, are probably not going to be successful here.
Well, it made the paper, and, you know, it was, everybody gets their 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, the lawyers for Coca-Cola are mad. They called it actually, there's a lot of folks mad. The lawyers called it a drive-by of a public company. They
sure.
said this is
frivolous and all.
Yeah, they said suing us is not a sport. And the judge, Delaware Chancery Court judge, accused the Marone family of being modern-day Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, God. You load up the truck and you move to Beverly.
Yeah, if the judge tells you that, you have to start to rethink what you're doing.
I think if a judge says that, you pretty much say, okay, I think I'll,
yeah,
I'm
done. Yeah, this
isn't
going anywhere.
All right, Scott, you're done. Go manage
okay.
those portfolios, and I'm going to share a couple things with our listeners that I have prepared for them. Let me, before we take our next break, Lisa, let me just get to a little bit. Well, let me call this out. This is something I'm going to have to address. Where is it? Okay. I know many of our listeners are retired, and they get AARP Magazine. Okay, well, if you've gotten it, let's see. It is the, what day is it? I'm trying to, oh, it's torn off. It's the April-May issue. Anyway, there's a very disappointing article in the April-May AARP magazine, and it's right on the front. It says, your financial planner's secrets, don't get ripped off. And it is a horrendous article. It's just terrible. It's horrible. And it's just this big slam on financial planners from a guy who's actually a financial planner. And so I've got to write a rebuttal, and I'm going to start working on it. It's just terrible. So I just want you to know that if you read the article, a lot of it is not true. There's some good points, but they're few and fleeting. There's not many. But I'm appalled at the AARP would put this kind of just trash in their magazine. So there I said it. You know what? I'm here to not to always make friends, but to tell the truth to you so you know what's going on in the financial world. And to, like Bill O'Reilly says, I'm looking out for you. So we're going to take a quick break, come back. I want to talk about, you may have to retire before you think, and what do you do about it? And can you retire early without a fortune? Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
And we're back. Hey, okay, so before the break, I promised to talk about more people retire earlier than they think they will. This is an interesting study that was reported in Financial Advisor Magazine by the folks at the Society of Actuaries. And they did a study of 800 people that were not retired, 800 people that were already retired, and compared the results. And it was some interesting stuff they found. And so what it told us was that there may be, you may have a certain plan for your retirement, but it may be different. And I've read this in a number of places that a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm going to work till I fall over, or I'm going to work to 70, or I'm going to do these things. And it doesn't always turn out like you plan. So the message I hear loud and clear is, if you're not planning and you don't have your plans together, you better get to it. And you need to be ready. You can't put it off. All right. Now, here's some interesting stuff. Because of health problems or because people get downsized, a lot of people that lose their jobs in their 50s and 60s have a really difficult finding employment. And what the study found was that a third of people, this is interesting, a third of people think they'll never retire, and that a lot of those folks ended up, though, retiring. 31% had retired before 55, and then another 20% before 60. So over half the people in this study retired before 60. That's amazing to me. Isn't that amazing? Lisa's shaking her head. Yeah, in reality, 31% of retirees quit work before age 55 and 20% before 60. So now, is that because they want to? A lot of that is, I've seen a lot of studies talk about people caring for family members. And then you've got people who are, because of the recession, lost jobs, downsized, right size, biggie size, whatever you want to call it. And so that happened. And then just simply health conditions. I've seen people not be able to work like they plan because of health conditions. So interesting study, and I think something that we should pay attention to. Now, the flip side, can you retire early without a fortune? Interesting question, isn't it? Bankrate had a Yahoo website article talking about this very subject, and they profiled four or five people, and I thought some of these were very interesting. This one guy, he retired at 36. Okay, believe that, Lisa? And he's not the Instagram guys that made $1 billion with Facebook. This guy lives in San Francisco. His name's Jacob. He's 36. He retired at 33. And he's got a website called Early Retirement Extreme. And he cuts his costs by using a bicycle. He eats at home and he enjoys a lot of low-cost activities. And so he lives on $7,000 a year. That's, boy, let me tell you what, that's frugal. And he said about $1,000 of that goes to hobbies. And then the rest of it is for his basic expenses. Boy, that's got to be some very basic expenses. Yeah. So Lisa's like, what's the expense? He says he spends $270 a month on rent and utilities. So he's got to be renting a room or something, right? And $100 for food. Man, what is he eating? Beans and rice? Yeah, $270 a month. Where is he living? And $95 for health insurance. Well, I can see that because he is young and that's not expensive. And then $120 for discretionary expenses. So I suppose if you're really frugal and, you know, can wear the same pair of clothes all year long. I mean, and then we got a couple other examples that I thought were interesting. Here's one that a couple, they actually, here's a guy named Gary. He retired and he lives in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Retired at 49, he's 66. And how did he do it? Well, he lives on about $50,000 a year in income. Well, part of it's Social Security. And then he's drawing money from his investments. And he's, you know, he's a little bit worried about what he's going to do if investments don't prove out. And see, this is the trick. He's concerned. He's got conservative mutual funds. And he retired early, but he pushed, you know, Virgin Islands is a perfect analogy. He pushed his sailboat away from the shore. And now he is hoping that everything goes well, because if those funds don't perform, I can't imagine what will happen to him if we have another 2008. You know, we have another 37% drop on the market. And, you know, that can happen. And when it does, the question for not only this gentleman who retired early and has his lump sum he's working with, but for all people who are retired, what do you do? Well, you better have cash money you can draw on. You better, it's really important to be drawing your income from safer things. I see more and more people that we talked earlier in the show with Scott about just the skittishness of retail investors. That's a lot of you out there listening to the show, and it's nerve-wracking. And I just met with a current client, and we're she's got some additional money that she wants to put for us to manage. And so we updated her plan. And one of the things that, as I went through her plan with her, I helped understand, because she was a little bit nervous about the market, and we talked about it. And so what we did is we basically set three phases for her retirement. And so during the first phase, she's going to get her income from a fixed annuity. That's going to give her security and safety, where she's going to draw that money out. It's still working. It still can make interest, but she's drawing on that during the first part of her retirement. The next part, phase two, she's drawing on some very conservative investments. Income portfolio. We talked about bonds earlier in the show today. She's drawing and using those bonds for income, and she's liquidating them, and it's a conservative portfolio. The third phase is drawing on money that's invested in the market. She doesn't have to draw on the money in the market, get this, for 17 years. So she's drawing from safe, pretty safe, and then she gets to the more aggressive stuff. And by then, we can slow that down. We can back that down and make it more conservative. So if you're out there and you're scratching your head and going, you know, this market makes me nervous, I don't know where to draw my money, get with an advisor, preferably somebody that can actually build a financial plan for you, and look at this, analyze what you're doing. But it's really not that hard. I guess that's, you know, that's really the message that I often want to share with you when I do this program. And when I meet with people, is this stuff is really not that hard. And there are these dumb articles like what I saw on AARP this month. And there's all this confusion out there. And there are lots of folks that talk in another language when they talk finances. And that's why I do this show, is so that I can help individual investors. And we have a lot of people that want to see us, and we help a lot of people because of our advertising, but and in doing the show and the other things I do. But if this is complicated to you, it doesn't have to be. It's really not that hard. Okay. All right. We'll do the rest of what I have on the next show. Thanks for being with me.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.